We're delighted that you're here tonight on this rainy Sunday evening as we journey or trudge the long road through the book of James. And by the way, our brother Savine is starting the book of James, I think, in a few weeks in his class. And I think that his class is about full, but I would imagine that he could be bribed if you tried, it might work. He's not here tonight, Book of James is a great practical book. We're up to verse 13 of James chapter 3, and I want to look with you tonight at verses 13 through 17. And you'll apologize. I need my notes tonight. I'm not sure that my mind's quite fast enough to be up to speed tonight. James says this. He says, "Who is wise and understanding among you?" And so in the first 13 verses that we looked at, or first 12 verses last week, James is essentially asking the question, who is righteous among you? Who's the holy people among you? Who's living the way that God would want? Who, if you're looking at people who have passed others in terms of righteousness, who are those? And he says, ultimately, those are people who have learned to some degree how to master the use of their tongues. He says, if you could control your tongue, you could control your whole body. And that's, I think, something that I wouldn't have naturally come to. And I think the people who James would be talking to would not naturally make that connection. And now James is saying not who are the righteous, but he's saying here, who are the wise? Now, again, if you and I were to be asked the question, who are the wise, we could come up with a variety of answers that our culture and would accept. Some would say, well, the wise are the powerful. I mean, it takes wisdom to live in the White House. It takes wisdom to get to the Senate. You can't be dumb and climb the ladders of success in this world. You can make a case that the wise are powerful. You can make a case that the wise have succeeded financially. I mean, it's not easy to build a fortune. It's not easy to secure a financial future. That takes a person of intellect. That takes a person of knowledge. You could argue that the wise are those who have succeeded financially. You could argue that the wise are the aged. I mean, you can't live older without learning something. You can't live older without a degree of wisdom. If you were dumb, you would have been dead long ago. I mean, you can't make it into latter years without a degree of wisdom. And I think you could make a strong case that wisdom and age correspond. But in James' day, I think that the likely answer, if you would have asked the question, who are the wise, they would have likely said, being Greeks and Romans or influenced by the Greeks and Romans, the wise are the intellectual, the wise are the educated, the wise are folks with degrees. In particular, among the Greeks and Romans, there were great orators, there were great public debaters. And these were men of skill, these were men of learning. And in that time, as I understand it, we might watch a football game, but they would go and they would watch an oratory battle. And in many ways, the great orators were known as the wise men of their day. And so I think they would have said more likely, knowledge, the intellectual, are the wise. And they would not say power or success or age, they would say intellect. You want to find the wise, find your nearest college campus, find the professors. Those are the wise people among us. But James, of course, is coming at it from a different point of view. And so he says here in these verses, he gives really 10 characteristics of wisdom And some of these I'll just read to you because I know that we can't do justice to 10. But he begins in verse 13. He says, "Who is wise among you? Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom." So he says, if you're looking for the wise, first of all, who are the humble? He said, because if you want to be wise, look for the people who have good conduct and who do it in the spirit of meekness or humility. For James, if you're looking at the characteristics of wisdom again, you would look for people who aren't proud. You would look for people who have a lower opinion of themselves than maybe others. Why is that? I think James would say, if you're really wise, if you're really smart, if you're really intellectual, of all the things that you know about, you ought to know yourself. And if you really know yourself, you ought to be humble, because if you know yourself, you see all the things you can't do. And so it's sort of a contradiction then for James to say, well, he is a proud, wise man. I think James would say, if he was wise, he wouldn't be proud. I remember hearing a preacher lecture to other preachers, and he said something to those of us who were in the audience that I'll never forget. He was talking about pride in the ministry. And he said, you need to understand this if you're a pastor, if you're a teacher. He said, it's true that you probably know more about the scriptures than the vast majority of people that you speak to. You should. You get paid to study the scriptures. They're not paid to study the scriptures 10 or 15 hours a week. You are. It makes sense that at some level you ought to know what's in the Bible better than they do. He said, however, having said that, if there's a plumber in your church, he doesn't come, you don't go to him and hear him lecture about plumbing for an hour a week. But he'll come to you and hear you talk about what you know about the Bible for an hour, maybe sometimes an hour and a half a week. And what that means is that the plumber knows all there is to know about plumbing, which you do not, but he also knows a whole lot about what you know. And you know nothing about what he knows. Now you think about that. They know a lot of stuff that you don't know. You all know a lot of stuff that I don't have a clue about. I wouldn't begin to know how to do your job. I wouldn't even know where to start in the kitchen. I don't know how to start. If you got more than a microwave, I'm lost. I don't know where to cook. I don't know how to do that kind of stuff. We were over at Patty Berkowitz today. We laid to rest Ron and one, and then we went over, or two, and then we went over to the house. And I'm sitting there, and I meet John and Imogene Arwood. The Arwood? They own Peggy Ann's. And so we're having a nice chat about donut making. I wouldn't know the first clue. I'd wipe out first day at Peggy Ann's. I didn't know there's $350,000 worth of equipment in that place, and how you make a donut, and it takes 4 minutes, and you come out. I'm sitting there saying, wow, boy, I'm an idiot. I mean, I'd be awful in the back room of Peggy Ann's, and this guy's a brilliant man. He knows how to make donuts. I don't know how to work on a car. I mean, you know, I always like that bit Jerry Seinfeld did about cars and identified with them. He said, you know, if you're taking a girl out on a date and the car stops in the road and you get it off to the side, he said, you're grateful for the hood, because if you're the guy, you got to get out and you got to act like you're going to try to fix it. And he said, the hood keeps her from watching what you're doing. You're able to put the hood up, and there you are, he said, but you don't have a shot of fixing it unless there's this big on-off switch that's flipped off. and that's me. You know, if there's not an on-off switch flipped off, I'm lost. But people know about those things. And if a mechanic is in a church, I know nothing about what they do, but they know an awful lot about what I do. That's what he's saying. That ought to humble you. That ought to humble you. When you look around the world, it's easy to say and dwell on what I know. But think about the vast scope of the world that you and I know absolutely nothing about. We all know far more. There's far more that we don't know than the meager things that we do know. And so James says, if you're looking for a wise person would naturally know what they don't know, and that would make them humble. Now, worldly wisdom, worldly intellect tends to make you proud. I mean, there's nothing that makes you prouder at some level than walking across the stage and getting your degree. There's nothing that can make you prouder than having some degree of education or having some area of expertise. But wisdom doesn't make you proud. But intellect could, but wisdom would not, because it's incompatible with wisdom that you would be proud. Second of all, he says that wise people do not harbor bitter envy. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast. You're not that bright. Lie against the truth. And the truth is you're not very wise. What is bitter envy? It's interesting that envy here in the Greek is the word zelos, by which we get our word zealous. It's true that the word zealous is a neutral word in the Bible, but it's also true that zealous, the vast majority of times, is used negatively. I think, and it's been a while since I studied that, it seems like the word zealous is in the Bible 43 times. Don't hold me to this. It seemed like it was in there 43 times. And 41 out of the 43 times it was used negatively. So the vast majority of times that the word zealous is used in the Bible is used negatively. And what it simply means is that you believe what you believe to the degree that you'll fight for it. In fact, when Paul is talking about his credentials under the law, he says in Philippians 3:6, concerning zeal, persecuting the church. And there's a phrase that's a long sentence, but he says, I was zealous, which means I persecuted the church. Zeal usually means that you'll fight and you'll die for what you believe. If a person says, I believe this, and I'll fight any man who believes differently. Tried to say two words at once there. That's what happens. I'll fight anybody who believes differently. That's a zealous person. I mean, if you'll fight, if you'll die for it, you are a zealous person. I mean, if you're on Facebook and you'd ever type, if you don't like this post, just unfriend me. That means you are a zealous person. It's like, we're not going to be friends if you can't agree with what I'm saying. It's done between us. We're finished. I'm killing the friendship. That's zeal. Now, people with worldly knowledge. And again, James, I think, is arguing the point that worldly knowledge and intellect is not the same as wisdom. People with worldly knowledge tend to get more zealous the more knowledgeable they get. I mean, people who tend to learn and increase in knowledge find themselves increasingly reaching that point where they say, I'm right and everybody's wrong and I'm not going to discuss it because I'm right. Tends to be what happens with intelligence, worldly knowledge. Two sort of go together. The more intellect you have, the more zealous you can become about what you believe. I remember, and we've talked about this some in recent weeks, I've just, again, I guess I'm going back in my mind more often to my childhood. And I remember, again, the way church was when I was a child. And I don't say this negatively, although I guess I say it negatively. But when I grew up, people knew the Bible better than they do now. They just did. And I think there are reasons for that. Again, I think one of the big reasons is that the kids rode the pew. That's just a personal reason, and I've said that multiple times. I think we caught a lot. I mean, we were bored out of our gourd, but we caught a lot. I can remember in sixth grade, I got transferred to a Christian school. It was a Baptist school. And I was 11 years old. I wasn't abnormally bright in comparison to the kids that were in the church. So I'm not saying that I was bright. I'm saying that the kids that grew up in the church that I grew up in, they all could have probably done this for the most part. But I remember that there in that Christian school, they would have a Bible time where the teacher would pull aside and you would study the Bible. And, you know, I can remember when she said once that when the devil was in heaven, and my hand went up, is like, that's debatable. I mean, 11, that's debatable. There's a variance of opinion on that. And I can remember when she said, now, when Jesus comes back again on the white horse, is like, debatable, you know. And I can remember once when she said, you know, now, when you're saved, you can never, ever lose your salvation. It's like, debatable. I can remember once when she was talking about, you know, when you get to the judgment, I don't know what she was getting at, but it's like God's going to take this scale and weigh all your good and then all of your bad on the other side, and if the good outweighs the bad, you'll get more jewels in your crown. And you're like, that's kooky talk. That's crazy. But I mean, I wasn't smart. There's just all the kids I grew up with had a pretty firm foundation on doctrine by they were 10 or 11 and could spot the stuff that wasn't in agreement with where they were at or where their church taught. Now, again, I think largely that's lost in our generation. I think even if you tried to teach the kids the doctrine as we learned it, you know, they go home and tell their parents they're bored and their parents find them another church. I mean, it just is not going to be feasible to do that. But it was back then. And I think that's why people knew the Bible more than they do now. You know, I hear people sometimes say, well, I'm glad it wasn't like it used to be back then when everybody had zeal. And by the way, we had zeal. That's the point. We knew the Bible, but we'd also fight and kill you over what we believed. I mean, with the knowledge came the zeal. And But you know, I'll hear people say, well, I'm glad it's not like it used to be when we were so exclusive and how we fought and how we went after this group and went after that group. I'm glad it's not quite like that. And in my mind, I say, I hear what you're saying. But the other point is that you probably don't know your Bible well enough to have a strong opinion of it worth fighting about. Because if you really knew your Bible, you'd probably have a lot of strong opinions and you would be more tempted than you are to scrap with people. But again, point being, we really did know the Bible much better back then. I don't think that's a bad thing to say. But again, as you recall, if you lived through those days, there was also a lot more zeal than there is today as well. The two sort of go together. But again, James is saying, wisdom is knowledge with the absence of the zeal attached to it, or the bitter zeal. A wise person knows, a wise person understands, a wise person increases in knowledge. But again, they also know what they don't know. That's key to wisdom. And so they listen, they understand, they communicate, And they understand what they don't know. So while they know a lot, they're not out to kill the people or destroy the people that disagree with them, because they're wise. Then thirdly, I'll speed up here in a quick minute. I'll get you out. Honest and for true. Thirdly, James says, wisdom is also not self-seeking. He says, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast. William Barclay says that this word for self-seeking in the Greek language originally referred specifically to women who spun for a living, sewers, seamstresses, and then it got where it generally became working for pay. And so when it talks about being self-seeking, it tends to mean the only reason that you're doing it is for money. He says that's what intellect does, though. Oftentimes, again, in our culture, if a person is intellectual, why do they get intellectual? To make money. I mean, why do a lot of people go to college? They're self-seeking. The reason I'm going to college is I want to make a lot of money. He said, but again, if you're wise, if you're a wise person, you know that money doesn't count for a lot. You know that you die poor. You know that money doesn't count much when you stand before the Lord on the day of judgment. You know that you can't take it with you. There aren't any U-Hauls following hearses. And so if you were wise, you wouldn't be just about the money, because you know that money ends up being nothing in the end. And so if a person is self-seeking, if a person is about the money, if what they do is financially driven, James says that can't be a wise person, because they haven't yet figured out that they can't take it with them. So James says, if you're wise, you understand again your weaknesses, so you're humble. If you're wise, you understand that there's a lot that you don't know, so you may know a lot, but you're not zealous. If you're wise, you have figured out that you can't take it with you, so that you're not greedy. If you're greedy, you can't be wise. If you're proud, you can't be wise. If you're zealous, you couldn't be wise. That's what James is saying. He says, in fact, in verse 15, he says, this kind of wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, is sensual, and it is demonic. Now, remember verse 6 last week when he says, if your tongue is on fire, that's demonic, set on fire by the flames of hell. Here he says, worldly intellect can also end up being demonic. If you look at it like this, worldly intellect and education is very often a great tool of Satan. Earthly wisdom, earthly knowledge is oftentimes a great tool of Satan. I mean, think of it like this. Where in the American culture do more people backslide than any other place? It's on college campuses. I mean, Christians raise their kids in the church, and we put enough in them and hope that by the time they get to college, by the time they graduate, they won't have forsaken the faith. It's on college campuses that we find it harder to be a Christian than anywhere else. As people are pursuing knowledge in these places where it's all about gaining knowledge and intellect, why is it then so hard to keep the faith? I think what James is saying is there's a reason for that. Because as your intellect grows, as you get more book knowledge, as you gain more wisdom in what you do, your pride grows. Your arrogance grows. Your desire to make money grows. You have this gifting. You figure out how to do this. You figure out how to fix a problem. You figure out how to help people. And the next thought is, wow, I'm going to go make some money with what I know. And the desire for money oftentimes crowds out your desire for God. One of the things that I have complained about throughout my life is that if parents, and I'm not there yet, so I may very well do the same thing. But it just seems to me, let me put it that way, that the best and brightest kids are discouraged from even thinking about going into the ministry. I mean, if your kid graduates at the top of their class in high school, if they're really intellectually smart, what do you want them to do? You don't tell them to go into the ministry. You tell them, go be a lawyer, go be a doctor. You're smart, go make some money. You're smart, go make some money. Again, in the church, the kids that oftentimes have the most to offer, because they're intellectual, it's like we say, oh, well, they're brilliant. They're going to end up going out there and they'll make lots of money. But the folks who can't quite cut it in life, maybe they'll end up in seminary. There's just a connection between worldly knowledge and pride and zealousness and self-seeking. And that's what worldly knowledge does. Now, again, James says that's why it can't come from heaven. Worldly knowledge is not heaven sent. It's earthly, it's sensual, and it's often a great tool of Satan because, again, it makes you proud, it makes you zealous, it directs your attention into the financial realm. So for that reason, you can't equate godly wisdom and worldly knowledge. He says, however, I'll move very quickly here. He says, this wisdom, verse 15, does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Verse 17, but wisdom that is above is first pure. Godly wisdom is pure. In other words, if you have godly wisdom, you know how to do right, and you know how to stay out of trouble. You know how to maintain your purity. I remember watching Judge Judy a while back. I don't do it a lot, but there must have been a commercial on Grit TV or something. But I remember this guy before Judge Judy, and he had been, by his tell, falsely arrested 3 or 4 times. He had a jail record, but he'd never done anything to deserve it. And so he's given Judge Judy this, you know, spill about, you know, how he had been falsely picked up on multiple occasions. And Judge Judy looks at the guy off to her left, the bailiff. And she says, have you ever been falsely arrested? He said, no. He said, I've never been falsely arrested either. How do you get falsely arrested? And he said, I don't know. Wise people know how to stay out of trouble. If you're smart, you won't get falsely arrested 4 times. You know how to stay out of trouble. Wise people know how to do what's right, to toe the line, to stay safe. Wisdom from God leads to purity. Wisdom from God leads to peace. It's first pure, then peaceable. If you're wise, you'll figure out how to live together. If you're wise, you'll figure out somehow how to make that marriage work. And I realize that there's only so much you can do. I realize it takes 2. But if there are two wise people in a marriage, the result ought to be peace. Wise people ought to figure that out. Wisdom from God also leads to gentleness. But the wisdom that is from above is pure, then peaceable, then gentle. William Barclay says that the word that's translated gentle here is the hardest word in the New Testament to translate. And I'll have to take his word for that because he's a Greek expert. Sometimes it's translated fair-minded. Barclay went back and saw how Aristotle used the word. And Aristotle used this word gentle or fair-minded to refer to a person who knows when to uphold the law and knows when to break the law. And for Aristotle to be gentle or fair-minded, that person knows when to set aside the law and grant grace in that situation. And he says, if you're wise from God, you'll know when to enforce the law and you'll know when to give grace. You'll be fair-minded. You'll have that wisdom from God. And then fourthly, he says, wisdom from God is also willing to yield, or some translations say, considerate. In other words, if you're wise, you will be willing to listen to reason and to fair appeals. You'll be willing to give in. You'll be willing to yield. Because again, there's a humility there. And then fifth, wisdom from God is merciful. Notice that. But wisdom that is from above, verse 17, is first pure, then peaceable, then gentle, then willing to yield, and it's full of mercy with good fruits. That's difficult to do, by the way. He says, if you have wisdom from God, you'll be merciful, but you'll also be able to give mercy and get good fruits from it. That's difficult to do. If you think so, if you don't think so, ask Karen Knight. It's hard to show mercy, to figure out how to give mercy. It's hard to know how to help people and have good result from it. I mean, you know what that's like, don't you? It's hard to be, we have that issue with our missions, don't we? But how do we give to the missions? How do we give to people? How do we show mercy but see good come of it? And James says God can help us. Wisdom from above teaches us how to do right and see good accomplished from it. Because again, you can think you're doing a lot of good things, but there'll be bad fruit from it, right? And then sixth, wisdom that comes from God is without partiality. It's impartial. Wisdom from God knows how to find justice somewhere. Somehow it's able to find middle ground. And remember Solomon, two ladies fighting, come to him. He's wise, so what does he do? Says, we're going to cut the baby in half, and you'll get one half, and you'll get one half. And he knows that that's going to root out the real mother, right? But he's able to find justice. He's able to find the middle ground. He's able to find what's right. And then wisdom that is from above is without hypocrisy. It's sincere. It's not hidden. It's not characteristic of a wise person to have five different stories going five different ways. So, James says that's wisdom. It's not to be confused with worldly intellect. Worldly intellect tends to pride and zeal and ultimately to financial gain. But wisdom from God leads to humility, leads to fair-mindedness, leads to investing our lives in the lives of others, not making money the priority. Leads to purity and peace and gentleness and consideration and impartiality. Amen. Amen. Will you stand with me?